Welcome to the Art Talk podcast, where I tell the stories of art, artists, and interview people in the arts. I am Karin Merks, your host, and I am an artist, art historian, teacher, and mentor. Welcome back to Art Talk, and I'm glad you're here with me for episode 99 and part 4 of our series The Gaze Reclaimed. Today we turn our focus on Edmonia Lewis, the African Native American sculptor who not only defied the racial and gendered expectations of 19th century America, but who carved, quite literally, her own path across continents. Her story is one of survival, of vision, and of art as resistance. Let's begin where most stories of greatness do not, with erasure. So who was Edmonia Lewis? Edmonia Lewis was born around 1844 in Greenbush, New York, to a Haitian American father and a mother of Mississauga, Ojibwe, and African American descent. Orphaned by the age of 9, she was raised by her mother's Ojibwe relatives and, by her own account, sold souvenirs to tourists near Niagara Falls. That image, just think about it. A young girl selling trinkets by the roaring water, her future unimaginable, is an essential part of her legacy. Because when we talk about Edmonia Lewis, we are not only talking about her achievements, we are confronting the odds she overcame simply to be seen. In an era where women of color were rarely educated, Lewis's admission to Oberlin College was both radical and rare. But her time there was marred by racism, and in 1862, she was accused, falsely, of poisoning 2 white classmates. Though acquitted, she was beaten by a mob and later denied her degree. That violence, both physical and institutional, could have ended her trajectory. But it didn't. Instead, she left for Boston, and there, under the guidance of sculptor Edward Brackett, she began crafting portrait medallions of abolitionists like William Lloyd Garrison and John Brown. These were more than commissions. They were subtle statements aligned with her artistic identity, with liberation movement. Her early works whispered resistance before she found the courage and the resources to shout. With modest patronage, Lewis earned enough to leave America in 1866. She crossed the Atlantic and arrived in Rome, a city that had long offered refuge to artists, especially those excluded from mainstream academies in Europe and America. Just imagine her arrival in Rome. A young black woman alone, entering the neoclassical epicenter of Western sculpture. Rome, with its cold marble and older traditions, was hardly a utopia, but it was freer than the racialized constraints of the United States. There she joined a community of expatriate women sculptors, many of whom were white Americans escaping patriarchal restrictions back home. But Lewis's story remained unique. Unlike most of her peers, who often hired Italian artisans to execute their work, Lewis insisted on carving her own marble. That decision was not only about artistic control, it was about authorship, authenticity, and proof. Proof that a black and indigenous woman could master a medium traditionally reserved for white men. Her sculptures carry deep political and emotional charge. Forever Free, 1867, shows a black man and woman, newly emancipated, rising in dignity. It is a monument to hope, but also to struggle, as the woman kneels not in submission, but in contemplation. And then came the death of Cleopatra in 1876. This was her masterwork, a sculpture that confronted every Western cliché about Egypt, race and womanhood. Unlike the eroticized Cleopatra of the 19th century Orientalism, Lewis rendered her queen in the stillness of death. No melodrama, no seduction, just the weight of a life lived under empire, now released. Critics were stunned, and some called it ghastly, unable to process the solemn dignity of a black queen presented without fantasy. Others recognized its brilliance. But Lewis had done something extraordinary. She reclaimed Cleopatra from Western myth and restored her as a human being. Black, powerful, tragic. So here is where we shift slightly, from biography to meditation. Because Lewis's legacy isn't just what she created. It's what her life asks us to confront. What does it mean to be an artist when the world refuses to see you? What does it mean to insist on beauty, on mastery, when every institution suggests you do not belong? These are questions Lewis faced, and they remain painfully relevant today for artists of color, for queer artists, for those working in traditions of locations outside the Western art market. Lewis was not alone in reclaiming narrative through form. Take Dave the Potter, David Drake, an enslaved man in South Carolina who inscribed poetic verses on the clay vessels, works now recognized as both functional objects and subversive literature. Or Joshua Johnson, one of the first known black portraitists in the US, who captured the American elite in Baltimore with dignity and nuance. His presence in the art scene was itself a quiet revolution. These artists were claiming, reclaiming space, sometimes literally, carving into stone and clay, sometimes figuratively, asserting their gaze through pain and word. And yet, for generations, they were relegated to the margins of art history. Their works are forgotten, misattributed, or simply ignored. Let's go to the women who sculpted against the odds. Because what of other women sculptors of the time? The art world told them they had no place in studios, no business with hammers or chisels. Harriet Hosmer sculpted Zenobia in chains, presenting a queen in defeat, yet was unmistakable dignity. And Whitney's allegorical work Africa dared to envision a continent rising from the horrors of slavery. Vinnie Rehm, still a teenager, sculpted Abraham Lincoln for the Capitol Rotunda. But among these, Lewis stood alone in her identity. She faced what the others did not. The brutal double bind of racism and sexism. And she prevailed. Her art was not simply aesthetic. It was political. It was a refusal to be erased. Let's take a closer look to Forever Free. Deceptively quiet sculpture. The man stands tall, one fist raised, chains broken. The woman kneels, But it is not submission, it is mourning, it is memory, it is prayer. It is also a reminder. Emancipation is not a singular event, it is an ongoing act. Lewis sculpted this not in Boston, not in Washington, but in Rome. From the old world, she reflected on the new, a country that claimed liberty yet denied it daily. And today, Forever Free resides at Howard University. It stands not just as art, but as witness. Edmonia Lewis may have died in obscurity in London, United Kingdom, her final years lost to archival silence. But her work outlived her. In the 1980s, a new generation of scholars, many of them women of color, began to reconstruct her legacy. The death of Cleopatra was rescued from storage. Her biography, The Indomitable Edmonia Lewis, a narrative biography, was pieced together from newspaper clippings, census data and letters. A fragmented archive reassembled with utter care. And now, her presence is undeniable. Her sculptures are studied, her name invoked, her gaze finally met. So, what do we take from Edmonia Lewis today? We take this, that to create is to defy. To sculpt, paint or write as a person rendered invisible is to say, I am here, and I will be remembered. Lewis's hands, small, brown, calloused from stone, shaped not only marble, but modernity. She carved into history itself. And now, with every exhibition, with every episode like this one, we carve her back into our collective consciousness. Next time, in the fifth episode of The Gaze Reclaimed, we will turn to Berthe Morisot, whom I call the mother of Impressionism. Until then, and keep looking, keep questioning, and as always, keep creating. I wish you a very peaceful and productive week. And remember, art is the cradle of your soul. Take care.